Welcome to the HR Business Blueprint Podcast. I'm Nikki Masterman, founder and managing director of Inspired HR. Joining me today on the podcast is Zoe Malam. Zoe Malam is an event strategist of Mayhem Consults, and she is also my head of events. I've known Zoe for just over 3 years now, and we're going to be talking today about the event strategy she has built for Inspired HR and what a fantastic event strategy it is here in the Northeast, how she is one of the most connected people I know in the Northeast, and I thought I was connected, but also hearing about the relationship and the growth that I've seen in Zoe, which I'm very, very proud to have seen over the last few years in working together. So Zoe, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us. I'm dead excited.
Me too.
First ever podcast.
I know. And I have to say, you look fabulous today.
Thank you. We will have to get a picture so everyone that listening can see how great I look today.
Fabulous colour on you. Very impressed. I'm sat here in jeans and jumper, by the way.
You still look gorgeous, my darling.
Oh, thank you. And this is why we work so well together. So let's talk about Zoe. When I first met Zoe, it was on the back of, I'd met her at a networking event and we'd swap cards like you do at these events. I was getting myself out there and she spent months trying to get me out for coffee. And
stalker.
She did turn into my stalker. She did. And I was having none of it. Zoe worked in an industry at that point that I wouldn't normally partner with. So I kind of deflected her for quite a while, but then we were approaching Christmas and I was like, it was a bit of a quieter time in HR, so I thought, go on, I'm going to relent and I'm going to meet you for a coffee and something to eat. And you came over to Blythe, and it was Blythe, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, it was that lovely cafe on
Dolly
the corner.
Dimples. Yeah, unfortunately they're not there now, but yes, we went for coffee at Dolly's and Zoe came along and she sat chattering away, and you know, she was a really great representative of who she was working for. Now, I'm very observant of people, and when I sat and listened to Zoe, I always pick up on things that are underlying in their conversation. I can pick up. So as Zoe knows, I'm a certified DISC profiler, so I read personalities, I read colors, I read more into what people are saying. And I sat and listened to her talking about what we could be doing as a business, and you just click with someone sometimes. And I'm very good at spotting potential talent in someone. And I sat and listened, and by this point, I actually zoned out of what she was talking about in relation to a partnership.
Great salesperson then.
You were, but I was more interested in you by that point. So you're chattering away and all I can think about is, I like this lady. There's some real untapped potential and talent in her and I'm spotting it. I'm picking up, I'm not sure she feels as valued as she should be. I'm picking up that she's probably not as valued as she should be in a way to her package, her recognition. And me being a typical coach and HR person, started manipulating the conversation a little bit more and getting her to open up and getting her to talk about things she probably wouldn't have normally talked about. Was she happy in her job? What was her ambitions? Was this a job she would always had an ambition to do in her career? And what did the future look like for her? And she ended up opening up, and I knew, because I spotted the underlying things that she wasn't sharing, so I dug them out. And it resulted in us having a real heart-to-heart, me recognising there was a real untapped talent and she needed to be working for someone that could help nurture that talent, show the person their value, give them the freedom that they need to thrive, and put a trust in them that you know they have the capability to show. Now, I didn't have any vacancies at that point, but I sat there thinking, I like you. You could work really well with me, and actually you'd be a great representative for my business. So I turned around and said to her at a certain point in the conversation, Zoe, what if there was a business that would pay you your worth, give you what you wanted, give you the freedom, build the job that you know you could do, and thrive because you know you can thrive and grow. What if that person was me and I offered you a job right here and now? Would you come and work for me?
I said no, didn't I?
You did.
I nearly wet myself at the sheer, the gravitas of the offer, because it was just, it was so, I was so shocked by it, and it was such a wonderful thing to hear. But I think my brain just didn't compute with it, and I was like, no, you're loyal to where you are. Like, this is so odd. But I remember leaving and ringing my mum and telling her about the conversation. I didn't have my own car at the time. I was driving her. We call it a roller skate because it literally is. And I sat in this car and I rang her and I was like, I think I've just been offered a job by this like woman in HR. And as every day I was on the phone to my mum, I was not so much complaining. It was just, I felt that there was more. I always thought there was more. And I think as humans, we always want and think there's more. But it felt even more like in my stomach, like it was a physical feeling. But I just remember like my head ruling my heart and being like, no, I can't do this. I'm loyal to where I'm at. And then I got in the car and I think I was either that day or the next day, I was driving to my friend Charlotte's house, who was also my previous employer. And I said to her, I was like, I've just had this incredible opportunity presented to me. And I told her all about you and Inspired HR and this lady that I'd met. And I taught all these things. I was like, you're so warm. I was like, she asked my blooming wage. Like, you know, and first time I'm meeting the woman, you know, she asked me what I want to do. And I told her about my idea of starting this event strategy company. And she loved it. And she was mint. Anyway, so I've stood there and I remember standing in Charlotte's living room, telling her everything about it. And she was like, so? And I was like, well, I said no. And she just looked at me as if I was the craziest person on the planet. And for some reason, like when your mum tells you you're mental, you just kind of get over it, don't you? Yeah. You're like, you know what, mum. But when my friend and ex-boss was standing in front of me saying, you are crackers, I was like, oh, maybe I am. And then I think I was still standing in her living room when I called you and said, I've changed my mind. Can we move forward?
Yeah. And as you know, I actually didn't have a job because I was doing my own networking and I hadn't really thought ahead on events. But one of the things we often talk about is I'm a big believer in that if you spot talent and if there is any way you can bring that talent into your business, why wouldn't you do it? And I did. I made a job for you. I couldn't afford it, but I made it. And I made it work. And we did make it work.
We did.
And it was game changing for us. And we have very similar values when it comes to doing business. And I think this is where we really hit it off, because for anyone who knows me, my whole business has been built on referrals, doing a good job for people, and on the back of relationship building. I've never done hard sales. I've never done typical marketing as a business. We've never done this cold calling. We've never done all of those kind of strategies. My whole business model has been built on relationships and introductions and doing a good job for business and referrals. And I remember when we talked about that job, we very much aligned on that. But then you also give me a bit of a reality call, because I was kind of thinking things would happen quicker and you were like, no, this is the time frame we need to be working to. It takes time for people to know, like, and trust you. And, you know, that's a phrase we use often on people need to build that relationship. Let's get a proper strategy built, because I had no proper strategy on where do we find our clients. I kind of winged it for a number of years. I'd done well out of winging it, because as people know, let's face it, I'm gobby northerner.
Talk the hind legs off a donkey, I think, is that the...
Yeah, that is true. And it worked well for me, but my business had reached a point where I couldn't do it all, and I was on the verge of reaching burnout. I couldn't do it all. I had no family time, and I needed someone to lead that on me, because for anyone who knows me, I hate admin. I hate paperwork. It's why I have a team that does it. I just want to rock up, and if I can talk or I can just be there, I'm good with that. Just do everything for me, let me rock up, let me be present, and let that social side of my ADHD come out, so I can go off and be a chatterbox in an environment that drives me. So that worked really well. So that's an introduction into how we met and why you come into the business. Prior to that, Zoe, what was your career history and what kind of industries did you work in?
So I started my first proper job And now when I say a proper job, I mean probably out of hospitality. So I, from obviously 16, I remember my 16th birthday actually, and to take, I'll take you back to my first day of work. And mum took me into Cramlington. There was this a Chinese restaurant and we used to go quite regularly. And she took me in and I was like all excited, all dolled up, you know, 16, my first proper like night out with my mum. I was dead excited. And I sat there and mum disappeared for a bit to go and talk to the owner. And I was like, oh, and at the time mum worked over the way as a mortgage advisor. And I thought, oh, well, she must have done some business with him. Anyway, she comes back and she's like, come here. I want you to say hello. And I was like, what are you introducing me for? Turned out to be a job interview. She took me for dinner on my 16th birthday. And I thought I was getting this wonderful night out and it's a blooming job interview. Now, don't get me wrong, like, you know, that shows my mum all over, like work ethic to her core. And I think, you know, that's obviously where I get a lot of my work ethic from. But yeah, so my first ever job was glass collecting in a Chinese restaurant. So got the bug for hospitality, did that, and then moved into contact centres, door-to-door selling. So very much sales, but building that resilience, which I absolutely adored, like from the service side of hospitality and then building the resilience of being in a contact centre and having someone say no to you all the time. And then door-to-door sales, I loved it. Earned loads of money. It was brilliant until the winter.
Mm.
And then I was like, yeah, you know what? This is not for me. You know, I can't have my ankles out in the winter, you know, and I'm like, I have to wear thick socks. So I sharp had a bit of a reality check there of like, maybe this isn't. And I remember I was standing in the queue of Primark and I got this text from an agency to go work at DFDS, the ferry operator over North Shields. And so that was my first kind of step into like a real career path, a real job. It was obviously, they're a global conglomerate, they're a huge company. And yeah, so went there to work in their little call center. And then within 6 months, moved into the product team and then the sales team. And I was there, I think, 7 years in total, 6.5 years, nearly seven. And I did loads of stuff from working on digital transformation projects. I built some amazing friends and relationships in that business that mentored me and helped me understand the world of work and just literally used as an absolute sponge and an opportunity to learn loads of stuff. So, and that's where I first got my bug for events. Our events lead went off on maternity. And prior to that, I was asked to help out with something and I just absolutely loved it and got this bug. And I have to tell you, when you've sorted the logistics for 600 people going out the country and back, there's nothing that will ever faze you ever again, especially when those 600 passengers are Glaswegians, you know, mate. Like there's so now that's why logistics just don't bother me, and I'm like a water off a duck's back, because like they were, some of them were so complex, but it was fantastic. I built relationships with people on the ship, and that's when I first realized the value of relationships as well. It wasn't just about me being able to execute the event. I had to build great relationships with every department in order to ensure the success. So I took that within that learning, did more within the sales team, and that was the first opportunity I had to host a table, which now anyone who knows me, I do pretty much on a monthly basis, if not more regularly. And just learned from so many great people, and like I say, just totally soaked up. And then from that, started working in the startup ecosystem of the Northeast, which is a fantastic, unfortunately, I think there's still not great stats for the region when it comes to startups. However, there is a lush ecosystem here. And I worked in that for a while within various different roles, including Charlie, who I mentioned before, with her business. And again, did some different stuff. And then again, more event management stuff. And I was in the startup sphere running an event. And I was like, God, this is the life. And I just really caught a bug from it. And then I also, the pandemic then made me think, oh, I'm missing hospitality. I'm missing out. I wasn't. I was just sick of being in the house, wasn't I? Like all of us. So the pandemic made me think a bit differently about what I wanted to do, and hence the role I was in when we first met. But also the pandemic did a number on me, like many people, escalated a problem that I had in terms of drinking alcohol, which I hadn't realised was a problem at the time. So on the day we first met, I think I was 2 weeks sober, if that. and the shakes. Like, I could barely hold. I was trying so hard for you not to see me spilling my coffee because I was shaking so much. And it was just, that was the start of an insane journey for me, but which also changed the kind of work as well. So, mm-hmm. yeah, events, project management, various different things. And then, like I say, had this wonderful idea to become an event strategist, which no one knew what it was, which is brilliant. And I love that about a consultancy, isn't it? You can just make shit up.
I think we refer to it as winging it, don't we?
Love it. I'm an expert in events and I've called myself a strategist and I love it. And I had a little brainstorm to think about all these words and it was just, but yeah, but I did a lot of work on the brand, obviously from the first day we met. And I remember so much saying to you when I think it was our first ever conversation as employee and employer. And I was like, you're my last employer, you. Mm-hmm. And you took it as a threat at one point. And I didn't mean, I was like, I don't mean I'm going to do anything to you.
Let me just clarify what that means. Yeah.
Yeah, there was no threat in it. But yeah, and that just led to more events.
I remember, you know, when we had that conversation, and actually just to clarify what you meant by that, you'd always been very transparent when you came to work for me. And it didn't dawn on me straight away when you said that you will be my very last employer. And then as we got talking, I suddenly dawned on me what you meant, because actually what you meant by that was you'd always had the plan to build your own business. And actually I loved that, because that showed me the drive and the motivation. And I always supported that from day one with you. I knew that over time you would transition and go to less and less hours, to the point you were ready to launch your own business. But we had already always discussed, so even though I refer to you as my head of events, because you've always been my head of events and relationships, but actually relationships, we got rid of that bit because we just do that naturally anyway. But you are my head of events. And even though I call you that, you're actually not an employee and haven't been now for 15 months, because you launched your own business. But I always knew I was wanted to be a client of yours. And for any of those thinking IR35, no, Zoe has got multiple clients. She has multiple clients. I don't dictate what she does. She has full freedom, but she does a brilliant job for me. And that's because you had, in those 2 years working for me, you had got my business to where it needed to be. You had the event strategy in place. It was just tweaking it every year to what worked and what didn't work. So it transitioned into your business model. And by that point, you were ready to launch your own business, which was just phenomenal to watch. I've watched you over 3 years now, and you're just a very different person to that person I met with the wobbly coffee.
Oh God, yeah. Like, but we achieved so much so quick. I remember when I said to, when you asked me that question on the first meeting, like, so what is it you want to do? And I was like, oh, well. And I gave you my first ever elevator pitch as a business owner. And you just totally got it straight away. And I was like, is it going to be this easy? Is this all it's going to take? I'm going to explain that what I want to do is have strategic thinking behind an approach with events, and we're going to execute it, and we're going to achieve X, Y, Z. And that's it. You just got it so quickly. And we did loads of pilots together to see what was best for the HR world. But at the time, no HR consultancy that I was aware of, or many businesses, were having this approach in the region of actually seeing a return of investment on the events they were running, but also doing it for the right reasons. You can't see the return of investment of everything in terms of pounds and pence, but there is a return of investment based on your values and based on more people, engagement, all these things. And what we saw really quickly working together is, because we were so aligned on those core values and people and ethical business, we were able to bring some incredible people together that shocked, I think, a lot of people, you know, in terms of like what we managed to achieve. And as someone who didn't drink, I was running stuff in a pub every, was it last Friday of the month? We got people at BrewDog, and that went brilliantly for a while. And then we saw a shift in events, and we saw daytime was more required. Knock that one on the head. But we've had some, we've done panel events with like Ramin Segal and Joanna Berry, who I know has obviously been a guest. The what we've done in 3 years is incredible. And we've tweaked that strategy to something incredible every year, that we're so comfortable and confident in, and just continue to achieve great impact via events, but also making sure that the commercial goals of the business are like underlined in everything. And it's just it's just been a dream to be able to say this is what I want to do and then have as my first client do it. And like you say, the freedom bit is brilliant. And I think that the freedom that you gave me and the trust allowed me to develop my entrepreneurial skills and build the confidence I needed. But also the first time I pitched the business to you, in terms, I didn't think that's what my business would be, if you remember. I was like, oh no, I'm gonna have this. And I remember going to dinner with my good friend Sharon MacArthur, Miss Menopause, and I actually saw her last night and we went back to dinner at the same place. So it was very much in my brain. And I said, this is what I'm gonna do. And I gave her this big speech and she went, why? And I just totally bottled it. And I was like, what do you mean, why? And but she meant it in a supportive way, which is like, what? Why would you do that? And she went, Zoe, what are you known for? I went, events. Just do that. Because I had this elaborate thing that I was going to do and all these revenue models. And she was like, just do that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, when you put it like that, mate. And she just, it was so funny. And I've got this vision of her. She sat there and I think we had Prosecco to celebrate something. And she had this glass of Prosecco. And she's like, just do what you're known for, woman. What are you overcomplicating it for? And Sharon's background was a coach. And she'd done some coaching with me before. And it was just incredible to have that. And then the more conversations I had, I started getting that feedback from people. And then especially when we started seeing such results, it was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that's what the business is. It's supporting SMEs with a strategy that actually underpins their commercial goals and helps them scale. That's what I can do, because I also know about scaling a business and being part of them businesses.
You do. And I mean, what you've helped me achieve as a business is incredible. But I remember when you started, I had a head of operations. And I remember having a bit of a heated debate with the individual.
I don't know what you're talking
about. about why you had not been set any goals for return on investment in relation to income or new clients or anything. I was like, because I haven't brought her in to do sales. I've brought her in to help me raise my visibility as a business, build relationships in the Northeast, help the Northeast small businesses with no intention or goal. And if I get something out of that, that's great. But why would I set targets for someone where actually all I want her to do is help me build relationships with the Northeast businesses? Mm-hmm. And that person found that really hard to understand. And even now people go, what do you mean? You never set a goal. There never was any goals. It was to build relationships, help me understand the Northeast Business Network, get to know the Northeast Business Network that I thought I knew, but I clearly didn't until I met you. But also helped me build a fantastic strategy that works amazing for our business, has built me some amazing partnerships. You know, you introduced me to Richard Reed and Kat, and, you know, which we've built fantastic relationship with, and, you know,
Joanna.
And Joanna. Mm-hmm. Oh, Joanna. I mean, I Joanna gets me guest speaking at Durham Uni now. And, you know, so these are things I couldn't have achieved on my own. So it does go both ways. But the magic in what you've done is, where we've gone into this franchise style model with territory license holders, what you have created, and we talked about this for the last year, is duplicatable for them. Yeah. I don't know any other HR company of my size that has a strategy around events like we've got. You've got your big national companies that have strategy. They've got the money to do it. But nobody was doing what I did. And they were like, you're nuts. You're a service-based business that builds income based on service delivery and chargeable time. But you've got somebody in your business that isn't generating an income and costing you X amount a year. And I'm like, and? Why? Just pay that for yourself and go out and network. And I'm like, that's not what I want to do.
That's where I said, like, you always got it in terms of like what the opportunities were. Like, everyone in business knows that if you have good relationships, opportunities will come from them. And from opportunities then comes revenue. And if you know that kind of circle of life of relationships, we know that opportunities are going to come. If we really wanted to, we could sit and look at every single sale and track it back. And there's a good chance there'll be 60, 70% of the sales growth over the last 2 years, not the first year because we were piloting, that could be attributed to some form of relationship from an event. Mm-hmm. And we could do that. And I know that. And we've looked into elements of those reports before. And we obviously do report on it. You know, we do make sure that stuff's working. But it's just, it is, like you see, really unique. And the scalable option is the fact that we've got that kind of document model that we can pick up and put in either different regions, different parts of the country, whoever the territory licensee is, and has access to that support. I don't know anyone who would go through that kind of franchise and have the level of support that you offer in terms of the team. Like, we've got such an entrepreneurial team anyway, but then that strategic mindset across the board with everyone and just the backgrounds of everyone having that team, like, it's just, it's priceless.
It is.
Absolutely priceless.
And we're not your typical territory license franchise model. You know, we have a lot of things in place that don't typically come. People don't get a business advisor for 12 months. They don't have an event strategist. They don't have somebody individually marketing that's going to work with them. They don't have the business owner mentoring them, you know, because I do the mentoring from a HR consultancy because I've been there and done it. You know, these are things that are priceless and you won't get in a typical franchise. So, you know, it's been absolutely brilliant for us. What's it like working with Inspired HR, Zoe?
Oh, dear. We're being recorded, so I can't be on it. No. It's been incredible, like, to touch on some of the things I've said already in terms of, you know, being seen and heard and valued. You know, like, we talked about that first meeting and you spotting potential, but you do that all the time. And I think that just, like, transcends across the entire team. Like, everyone listens to each other, everyone hears each other, everyone is seen and feels valued. And that's that little pocket of power that you've created as a business owner is what's makes it so great to work with Inspired. And, like, even our group chats are hilarious, you know, but the support that's there as well. And, like, if anyone's going through anything personally, like, we know that we haven't just got you, we've got the entire Inspired HR team as a collective, as support. And I remember coming into the office when I first started working for you, I was going through a breakup, and we used to spend a good half an hour at the start of every day, like, pepping me up and, you know, and basically scorning men. Poor Mark. Poor Mark. Bless him. You know, the only man in the office had to look. But he chirped in and he chimed into it all. And, you know, we had this little kind of, it was a sisterhood with Mark around kind of, you know, how we build up strong, amazing women. Well, strong, amazing people. And we did it together. And that's what I've got out of it, is that kind of catalyst to build confidence and be, know who I am and be able to be that. Because that's the other thing. You used to, when I used to work in different places in the past, you've got to have your work self and then you've got to have your personal self. And I always struggled with that because I blurred the lines. Now I realize it's because I'm entrepreneurial and I should be self-employed, because lines are always blurred when you're self-employed. But then I was like, you've got to have these two different personas. And first walking into the office, I remember feeling like I didn't have to have two personas. Like, no. I am Zoe Malam and I do events and you guys see me and hear me. You know, and I feel like I could go on for ages about how great it is to work with you guys, because that I always say the team. But that's always been important to me in my business model with what I do, is that I embed in the team. And that's came from you guys and what you've done. I'm not an external consultant and I don't feel like that within the team. I am part of Inspired HR and who, you know, always will be. And I think that's what's unique to other businesses in terms of feeling as a consultant. I'm there and they're my team and they're my guys.
And that's actually really important to me. I mean, for anyone that knows my team, people know my team, but actually what they don't always realise is that three of my key team are actually self-employed with multiple clients.
Yeah.
But because we embed them and value them as one of the team, you know, and people don't always realise all of our team is not local either. So
yeah.
I had this the other day where a client said, oh, is Jenny going to come on site? And I was like, no, Jenny, my head of consultancy, is based in Bedford, just outside Milton Keynes. Oh, I thought she was local. And I'm like, no, for anyone who knows me, if you spot talent, bring it in, create a job, but also trust your people, give them the freedom, allow them to make mistakes because they will learn from them. But I'm a big believer in trust, transparency, letting people spread their wings. And if you find a good person, it doesn't matter where they are, employ them, you know. So Harriet, my head of marketing, she's based in Exeter. Jenny's based in Bedford. People can't believe, not, you know, for the size of my business, not all my team are local. And I was like, they don't need to be. The world has changed. That's what Zoom and all of the other systems are for. If you have a great person, doesn't matter where they are. And that's something that's always been really, really important to me. And I do have a fabulous team. And you're right in relation to sometimes we recognise when people are not always okay either. And I did that this morning. I'd noticed one of our team had been quiet for a couple of days. So I picked up the phone this morning and I was like, everything okay? I've not seen anything of you for the last couple of days. You've been very quiet. I know she's doing the work. Never need to check on my people doing the work. I trust them implicitly. I can see that the work's getting done. Don't need to check. But it was like, are you okay? And she was like, do you know what? She said, the one thing I get about you is you always know when to pick up the phone and you know when you need to talk to me. She said, and she went on to talk about that she was okay, but there'd been a couple of friends that have not been okay this week and she's been supporting them. And sometimes, and I talk to business owners about this all the time, of trust your people, know what's important to them, and have an awareness of what's going on. If somebody's suddenly very quiet and they're not commenting in a chat, there's probably a reason for that. Mm. Doesn't take 2 minutes to just pick up the phone and check they're okay. And I'm not always around the team. I mean, we only go into the office 3 days a week. If we need to go into the office, I work from home 2 days a week. I like those 2 days a week around my son. It means I can work. I don't have to do the hair, the makeup. I can work from home. And I give the team the freedom to work from when they want and things like that. So we're not always seeing each other to know things are going on in their life.
You do have that ability to just know. And I remember one of the first things I realised about you when we had that coffee at Dolly Dimples was I felt when you asked me questions, you saw in my soul. I was like, oh my God. And I felt instantly that I couldn't lie. Like, not that I'm a terrible liar anyway, but it was very much that kind of like, she can see me, like she sees through me kind of thing, in that way of, and you do have like, is it an empath? Is that what you call it?
Yeah,
like
empath, I know, when you can read.
Yeah, when you feel a vibe of someone. Uh-huh. And I know it comes down to you honing in like your intuition. Yeah, when anything's ever going wrong, like you do just feel it because you can pick up on the vibe like via your intuition, which is fascinating to watch.
I mean, I did my EQ many years ago. Mm. I'm very self-aware. My self-awareness is above average. I remember having all of this done, and my awareness of others is above average, and it's because I listen to words, I see between the lines, I watch body language, I watch where eyes go, I watch where the hands go, and I'm very, very observant. I always have been. So it's probably one of the reasons I became a DISC profiler, because I read colours and people really well, and actually that's done me really good on making sure I've built the fantastic team that we have got, but also helping businesses build the team that they need as well.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what you talked about around your journey to sobriety.
Okay.
Talk to me about that, because I know how much of a passion that is for you. Where did that come from? And let's talk about the reality of that still in the world at the moment.
Absolutely. So like I say, I think it was a couple of weeks before we first met, I was on a trip to London, and 2 weeks prior to that trip, I had coffee with a lady called Louise, and she told me that she was 6 months alcohol free, and it was amazing, changed her life, and she'd read this book. And I replied, I don't trust people that don't drink.
Okay.
I know. So ironic now. And I was like, I don't know how you get through the day. I couldn't do that. And she didn't even ask me for my opinion towards it. She said, this is what I've done with my life. This is what I'm doing. And for some reason, I felt the need to say why I didn't want that life. And that, you know, we have that a lot now in terms of when you make a choice of something. So for example, if someone doesn't want to drink alcohol on a night out, for some reason, we think it's our business to ask why. And it's not your business. It's got nothing to do with you, why that person has decided not to drink alcohol. But because of the culture that we live in, we hold a bit of pressure on it. So yeah, so I had this weekend in London. I drank excessively. It was ridiculous. And as I mentioned earlier about this, the breakup, that all kind of came to a head as well. And I was coming back, and I text this Louise who I'd had lunch with as I was in King's Cross and said, what was that book again? And left it like that. And she was like, oh, this is it. Sent me the link. And I bought it on Google Books there and then.
And I read three quarters of it on the train home, crying my eyes out because of A, I was hungover as hell, and B, obviously going through this breakup. I also felt really guilty for getting so drunk while I was away because it just wasn't appropriate for where I was. Anyway, so coming back to Newcastle, I go straight to Mum's, walk in the door, tell her everything that's happened, the fact that I've, you know, I drank far too much at the weekend, breakup, blah, 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 woe is me, the world's against me, all the usual kind of hangover conversation. And Mum offered to pour me a glass of wine.
Okay.
And I was thanks, like, Mum. I'm reading this book about, she's like, well, let this be the last one. And she like poured it and gave it to me. And at the time I drank it and I was like, I've just read that book and I've just sat there for 4.5 hours from King's Cross saying I'm going to quit drinking. And I've walked into Mum's house and I'm halfway down a bottle of Shiraz. Like, what on earth am I doing? I don't even like Shiraz. Anyway, drank this glass of wine. But I remember so vividly her saying, let this be your last one if you need it to be. And that was 3.5 years ago. And that was my last glass of wine mm-hmm. and my last alcoholic beverage. So over the next kind of few months, I read this book. It's called, it's by Claire Pooley, Sober Diaries. Read it, reread it, a different chapter every night, and keep rereading it whenever I have a moment where I think that I might want to drink alcohol again. And I know since that book's helped people in my network, but essentially read the book and thought, you know what, I'm going to do 100 days. And I got to 100 days. And then I felt this weird like shift inside me of like, well, if you can do 100 days, you can probably do 200. And I was like, right, okay, yeah, do 200. And I counted down and I celebrated different days and I got to 200 days. And then the kind of feeling inside me felt that I had like a bigger purpose. I know it sounds a bit weird, but it was like, I just feel like there's more to life. Like, why am I focusing so much energy counting every day I don't have a drink? Because even mm-hmm. though I wasn't drinking anymore, it was still on my mind all the time. It was consuming my life still. And I was like, how do I get free of this chain of alcohol? And that's when I realized that I was probably an addict, and I started looking into addictive personalities and addictive behaviors and what I needed to do as part of a recovery journey rather than mm-hmm. just a not drinking. And the reflection that came from that and the people I've met. So we've got like Smartworks Recovery in the region. Jenny's amazing, built a friendship there and also got loads of support and kind of resources around kind of being in recovery. Followed a million people that are going through sobriety on social media, found a love for Anne Hathaway for saying she quit drinking. But again, mm-hmm. it was, and it's very much like, I know that there's a lot of people who just quit drinking for various reasons, and some people quit drinking because of a toxic relationship or think mm-hmm. they might be an addict. Whatever the reason is, I go back to my first point of it's not your business. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that still gets me when I say, oh, I don't drink, why? Mm-hmm. And I don't bite people's head off and say it's none of your business, but I do say I'm really comfortable to talk about this, but a lot of people aren't. Mm-hmm. And also, you don't know whether it's a health reason or they could be trying to have a baby, they could be going through fertility issues. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it is, and that question of why could really trigger someone. So I try and we've talked about this many a time back then is we try within Inspired HR and with all of my clients, whenever we're hosting a table or doing anything, we talk about the fact that half the table are probably non-drinkers, or we're a mix of drinkers mm-hmm. and non-drinkers. And we always say in our comms, you do you, but please respect people's decisions, and I don't want it to be a topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. And we put that on all our comms now. And I do know some people see it as odd, but it just means that if you've been in the cultural situation where you're used to asking someone why they're not drinking, or go on, have one, you don't do it on that night. So the non-drinkers have the best night ever. That energy is completely lifted and everyone just has the best night. And it's just a small thing that we've implemented in our strategy of how we approach people and events. And we always just, you know, we have the podcast launch, for example, we had alcohol-free Prosecco.
We did.
We knew 90% of people would be driving. We knew that it's a challenge when you get offered a drink like that and then you maybe take it out of feeling you need to, and then you're like, well, actually, I don't like even having one when I'm driving. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't. And, you know, you yourself, like, you don't even like having one when you're driving. So everyone's different to it. So we just took the kind of pressure off, didn't we? And everyone had a glass of fizz. Great pictures came out of it. And And obviously some, I remember Ashley having like 10 glasses. She's like, this is lovely. And I was like, imagine if it was real, God, you'd be rolling out. But she went, but it's great because I feel like I'm part of the party. I'm having a glass of fizz. I'm part of it. I feel like I'm having that celebratory and the habitual bit of having a drink, but I'm not. There's no effect mm-hmm. to it. And since she's given up drinking.
She has.
Yeah,
she was,
you know, she's read Claire Pooley as well. And not, I don't get commission on Claire Pooley books. I would like to just say that. But yeah, it's been a fascinating journey of reflection, and it's probably made me more emotionally intelligent. It's probably made me more caring. I've built amazing friendships, like, or kind of, probably built isn't the right word. I've dug deeper into some of my friendships, and I've got the most supportive girls around me and guys. I've got some incredible friends, and it's just the norm now. And I love mm-hmm. it when I go out. There's a group of us that go out quite regularly, once a quarter. And I remember one of the, there's six or seven of us, sat at dinner and we're ordering drinks. And normally I'm the only non-drinker. And at this particular night, there was 50-50 split between drinkers mm-hmm. and non-drinker. But no one talked about it. No one was like, oh, you're not having a wine with your dinner. Is everything all right? Oh, are you pregnant? Oh, are you pregnant? Because you're a woman and not drinking, so you've got to be pregnant. And it was just not talked about, and it was mm-hmm. just beautiful. And then later on in the night, one of the people were like, I've decided to take some time off drinking. And it was like, great. They've decided they want to share with their friends, but it hasn't come from anyone else. And that's mm-hmm. the beauty of what I've realised as well, is that, you know, at the end of the day, we all know people's choices are their choices. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you've just got to sit on our hands and not say anything. Mm-hmm. And if they want to talk about why. But I also welcome conversations. And every time I used to put a sober versary on my socials, I used to get inundated with DMs of like, I've got an alcoholic mother. How do you cope? Like, have you got any tips? Or I really want to quit. I think I've got a really bad relationship. I'm not sure if I'm an addict. I hate the word alcoholic. And there was a TEDx at Teesside last year. Again, not a book that I'm pushing. But Millie Gooch wrote this book and did this amazing TED talk. And she asked AI to generate a picture of an alcoholic. And it was what we see in films. It was this bloke who was like, looked, he was covered in like his own sick, he was wearing a shirt, he was like all of it, he was grey skinned because of how he was. And it was like, that's what it was. But then she showed a picture of her at 27 living her best life, apparently. You know, and people always used to say, oh, you're such a fun drunk. I'm like, yeah, you didn't see me two nights in a row.
And I saw that. I mean, yeah. it was, she did a fabulous talk, and she was your typical young girl out partying drunk, and actually she realised how risky that put her. Really insightful, great presentation. Going through that sobriety, I've seen a real change in you. I mean, I never saw you at the point you were drinking, but I know from our conversations some of the things that it led to in relationships or where you were at events, and you know, the focus might have been on you as an individual from a how that might have been seen by other people in business around you and how that could have affected you. And I remember we had a conversation, must have been 6 or 12 months in, about us working together. And I work in a very serious industry, let's be honest here. And I have to think about reputation and perception and everything all the time. And I remember you saying to me, and it was a joke, but when we think about it, it's quite serious. It was a good job I give up alcohol at the point we started working together, because I'm not sure your reputation and perception in your industry would have coped with me.
exactly. No, it would have. There was a times when we'd been like, obviously around clients at dinners and stuff, and I just get these little visions of what I would have been like. And I'm like, thank God. You know, because I probably wouldn't have been working with you for long.
Yeah. And I remember you actually saying that to me, and I went, yeah, I could have been dealing with you getting drunk on the table and showing us up.
Yeah, exactly.
And ruining our reputation.
Yeah.
I'm seeing an increase in the business sector of people talking about how they've given up alcohol. And I've seen a number of shared and mutual contacts that are now talking about giving up that journey. I mean, for anyone who knows me, I've got the biggest alcohol collection going, sat in my kitchen. And it's something I've built up over the years, but I accept I'm an addict to shopping. So yes. For anyone who knows my handbags, my shoes, my trainers, if I like something, I'll buy it in multiple colours and multiple sizes and this, that and the other. And for anyone who truly knows me, they'll see that collection and think I'm an alcoholic. No, you'd know I was an alcoholic because it'd all be empty.
Yes.
It wouldn't be sat
filled
there.
Filled with water.
Yes, filled with water with colourant in. But they're not. A lot of them are bottles not opened. And I know we were talking earlier about I don't drink a lot. I can't drink a lot because I did have gastric surgery 9 years ago. So I don't have a normal stomach anymore. Alcohol goes straight into my bloodstream very quickly, especially if I've not eaten, but can also come out my bloodstream very quickly as well. So I can be drunk within 5 minutes of picking a gin up, but then sober again 20 minutes later.
Which is very funny to watch.
You've seen that. And I do stop as soon as I start to recognise it. But yeah. Unfortunately, it kicks into me too quick and I have to sit still and behave myself whilst it wears off again. And that's normally because I haven't eaten very much. But I was talking to you about the alcohol collection on how I'm going to have a bit of a clear out, actually, because I want the space back. It's sat there. And it comes back to that rescuer in me thinking, oh, if I have a party or people come round, I've got all the alcohol, I don't need to bring anything, they can party. But the reality is, whenever I have people round, they bring what they want to drink anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get touched. It sits there and goes out of date. And actually, my best friend last year opened a bottle of Baileys that I had been sat there a year or two, didn't think about it. She was poorly the next day.
Oh, no.
So I've now been told I've got to get rid of all of the Baileys. So I do need to get rid of that.
You've got to read expiry dates, Nikki.
Yeah, I know. I will have a clear out. I will get rid of it. So it will be a lot emptier. Just creates more room for more hoarding, as my husband puts it.
Absolutely.
You've been on quite the journey over the last 3 years. And I can talk about where you've come from when you started to work for me to this person that I see now. And I have just seen this tremendous growth, this person thrive. It's been wonderful to watch. I often describe it as a parent-child relationship where you've enabled that child to flourish. And I won't take credit for all that you've achieved because you do work hard and you want things done right. And you even make me think sometimes when I kind of go, can we do this, can we do that? And you're like, let me just stop and get you to think about that. You bring great value to many businesses in what you do.
Thank you.
And I've just seen you thrive so much. And I'm a bit like a proud parent when it comes to you. And I'm trying not to cry right now because we've cried numerous times
every
over
time
this.
Every time we talk about this.
Every
yes.
time.
But come on,
we can do this. We're not going to cry. But it's the proud parent thing. I've seen you flourish and grow. But how would you describe that growth in yourself over the last 3.5 years?
Oh, God. I do. People have said this to me, and at the time when I first heard this phrase, I thought it was odd. But now I think even now I'm further in that reflective kind of journey. People say I reinvented myself. Mm-hmm. And I really see that now, like I absolutely did. I didn't change 100% of who I was, but I took all of the things that I loved and then I just left the things that I didn't like about myself with that bottle of Shiraz in my mum's mm-hmm. flat. She doesn't own that flat anymore either, so it really feels like a bit of a closed book for me in terms mm-hmm. of I left everything in that flat and, yeah, absolutely reinvented. And just, I suppose, the growth for me is like, I'm also obviously incredibly proud from it, but also like appreciative of everyone, including yourself, for seeing those parts of me that I didn't see. Like I never saw any of those good bits. I just saw the bad bits that I say I left behind. So having you and other my amazing friends and family see that has just, and actually honing in on that and the support, like, you know, I don't want to gush too much, but I think there's a lot to be said about your besties in biz and you know, your real relationships that you have in life and mm-hmm. those who see you and really help you on that journey. And yeah, helped me to reinvent myself, focusing on what you guys were telling me was great that I never saw before. And now you can't shut me up about how great I am.
But you should shout about it because honestly, I've seen your growth in friendships, I've seen the growth in the relationship we've built, I've seen the growth in you as a person, just what you've learned from the people around you within us as well that you've then put to great use in business, and just your life as well. I've seen your relationships with individuals and partners change, and it felt like you've learned to love yourself again.
Oh, absolutely. You know, big hug and self-care and self-love is a big part of of my life now. Like, I don't think I ever understood what self-care was. I do think I had this really weird conception of what it actually was. And I genuinely had this vision in my head of that, well, self-care is about, like, going to a spa. I can't afford to do that 3 times a week, you know. So how am I supposed to ever care for myself? And it turns out that my version of self, everyone's different. And my version of self-care is doing the things that I love with the people I love. Mm-hmm. So every weekend I'm in the sea down King Edwards.
You are.
I do.
You still won't get me there, though. I don't. Sorry, no. You're not getting me in cold water. I know no, I'm good. I'm happy to look at your pictures on that.
Yes, no. And it's
from my heated blanket on the sofa.
Yes, yeah. I have a heated blanket too, and I love my sofa time. But at King Edward's Bay, there's an incredible business called Steam and Salt. Again, not on commission, but I go down there most Saturdays unless I'm not in the region. So if I'm traveling or anything, but generally I'm down there every weekend, normally on a Saturday with friends and then on a Sunday on my own. And it's basically an acceleration of cold water therapy, which is amazing for anyone with anxiety or depression or whatever. So as an addict and understanding my addictive behaviours and how I kind of get into a situation and then rabbit hole into it and like snowball, mm-hmm. the way that the one thing that I've learned in magic is almost to slow down a bit and not let that voice in my head saying this is what you should be doing and do it next, and slowing down has been incredible. So I do in the sea every weekend. That cold water and steam is so great for my zen. I've started salsa.
Oh,
I've started salsa.
Love that.
I do hope to obviously meet a husband. That's the reason behind that one.
I tried to get my husband into salsa. He's having none of it.
So yeah, started salsa. And then recently I try and do like a new first quite often. Another friend of mine, we've talked quite a lot recently about like the need for that. So I did Tai Chi for the first time recently, and I carve out a certain amount of time like per week to have on my own in my flat. Because also one of the things that you'll remember is it took me 3.5 years to sell my old flat and buy my new
one. Oh, that was painful.
I know. I nearly went in the Guinness Book of Records. I actually sent off an email to get the information to see if I could apply to it. But it was genuinely, because it was the longest sale ever.
Longest house sale ever.
When my solicitor came in for the meeting, she put down paperwork and I was like, oh, is that you, what you're doing for the day? She went, no, that's just yours. I went, oh my God. And it was literally like like 12 inches high, like of papers. And I love that space that I've created there. I've completely revamped the whole thing. And I've realized in the pandemic that space was really important to me. So mm-hmm. my home office is really important. My bedroom's obviously for sleeping. My home office is for work and creativity. It's an absolute pigsty. There's stuff on the walls, but my front room is very much minimalist. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even nighttime routine and stuff like that. So I can't remember what my point was there of talking about
having your own space.
Space is really important. Self-care, and that's part of it. And I suppose one of reinventing myself, one of the things that came out of that was protecting my peace. Mm-hmm. So when I used to ignore my intuition all the time, when it would tell me that I didn't want to do something, and I was like, well, no, because I have to do it. I have to do that. Of course mm-hmm. I do. Whereas now, if there's something I don't want to do, I don't do it, mm-hmm. and I don't apologize for it anymore.
No.
Like if I can't do something, or I really don't want to, if I've been out 3 nights on the trot, I'll cancel whatever I'm supposed to do the next day, and I'll be apologetic. But all of the people in my life that I love dearly, that I spend as much time with and do dinners and coffees with, we're all of the same kind of mindset now. Mm-hmm. That if you're not ready to come and turn up and be present and turn up for me, rather you didn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, go and have your night on the sofa that you need, and let's speak in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. It's generally in 3 weeks' time, because that's how my diary works these mm-hmm. days. But yeah, I saw a meme the other day of like how millennials try to like have a coffee with a friend, and it's like, yeah, I'll see you in like the third Tuesday of June in like 2027. And I laughed at it and said, and I was like, yeah, you know what? That's so right.
I've seen your diary.
I know.
I remember cracking up at how much social time you had.
Oh, no. Yeah. With me, my besties, Jess and Tamma, like when the three of us try to find dates, it's hilarious. Like the other Wednesday we were at Jess's house, and it literally took us, I think, 45 minutes to try and find a weekend to go away. And then Jess always wants to do a bloody hike.
Oh. Anyway. She does like her walks.
She does.
I've really enjoyed our conversation, Zoe. And
so have I.
We've had a fabulous 3.5 years together, with many more to come, I am sure. if there was something for people starting out in business or growing that need to think about from an event strategy point of view, what hints, tips, or would you recommend they need to think about or do?
So it'd be very similar to the kind of experience I've had in terms of business startup, like talk to people, share the idea, and always think about your why. Like, you don't set up a business without knowing why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And you probably have done some form of business plan and business model canvas. You need to have that same thought process to any event you're trying to do. Now, I have a lot of conversations with people when they come to me, if I've got this idea about an event, I say why. And mm-hmm. it turns out they don't even need or want an event. That's not what they mm-hmm. need. And I love those conversations just as much. And that's not me talking myself out of work. Mm-hmm. It's more just, you've got to do it for the right reasons. We always focus on impact mm-hmm. for our event strategies at Inspired HR. We always think about, what does that participant or what is that attendee going to think when they walk out the room? And I talk to speakers about this all the time. How do you want them to ring whoever to say, I've just been at this event, this is what I've learned. How do you want them to talk about you? And we always focus on impact. And I think if you mm-hmm. focus on how you want to impact your attendees or your participants, and then always do it for the and understand your why, you'll have a much more impactful event. And you might realize you don't actually need an event. You might need something else.
And we've talked about that right from the beginning of our journey, whereby we never do events because I'm there to build business. We do there for events to help the people around us mm-hmm. and help have an impact on them.
Exactly. And that has enabled us to build really real relationships. One of our core values, we're building real relationships because we're showcasing value. You know, everyone talks about kind of having a value add when they speak out on social media or whatever they mm-hmm. do, and have and owning and understanding your value when you have these conversations really enables true exceptional relationships, which then opportunities come from.
Zoe, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I have loved your sobriety story and our journey together, which will continue. It's always a pleasure when we get together. We don't get together enough because obviously we work, even though we work together, people think we're together all the time, but we're not.
Unfortunately not.
What's next for you?
Oh, God. Well, 2025 is my year of balance. So if anything, this year is a year of less. I have reminded myself recently why I first went self-employed, and it was to work less. It was to not do what I did when I was working in a corporate and feel that I had that pressure on my shoulders of working ridiculous hours, filling the diary every hour God sends from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m. networking Monday to Friday. So yeah, so I suppose what's next for me is very much focusing more on my self-care and focusing on me. The business is sorted. I'm really pleased with wonderful clients I have. This is my year.
Fabulous. And if someone does want to reach out to you and work with
don't.
You.
No, I'm joking.
How do they reach out to you, Zoe?
So I do have a website, mayhemconsults.co.uk. So people can have a look on there and see my services. And there's a contact form on there as well. And obviously they can find me on LinkedIn. Obviously I'm under Zoe Mayhem.
Fabulous. Thank you, Zoe. Thanks for listening to the HR Business Blueprint podcast. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head to the show notes. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. See you next time.